Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of The Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, Ryan Brown, WJOX in Birmingham, always a listener favorite. He joins. We talk some Major League Baseball. We talk a lot of college basketball, a lot of college football, and we talk about Ryan's trip recently to Manawai, Nebraska, as part of his pay-up for losing the WJOX bracket challenge. So we'll get to that in a minute. You'll enjoy it. It's a fun interview. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. It is located, frankly, right next door to the Oxford Exxon, our flagship host for our flagship podcast. So head over to the Oxford Exxon, fill up, and then go fill yourself up at the Oxford Crystal. Get 10 crystals for $6. Pick any 5 for $5.55. They've got that going on still. The $3 square meal is ready for you, and also those scrambler breakfast bowls. If you're just getting started, need something to pick you up to get your day going. It's all of that at the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call the number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, and he'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. If you're in the market for a vehicle, if you think you might be about to be in the market for a vehicle, give Corey a call. Get a quote. You'll be glad you did. Even if you're not convinced that you want a Ford product, get a quote. Trust me. You might be surprised how quickly you end up coming back to Clark Ford. I did. Corey told me, I want to be your truck guy. I want to be your car guy. And he's proven it to me. He'll prove it to you as well. And then at the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the Beer Garden. And you'll get $500 off your already great deal at Clark Ford in Amory. Again, that number is 662-257-1900. This is a podcast that is also brought to you by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you know you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in the condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. It's J-Lowe, J-L-O-W-E, at CommunityMTG.com. And we're brought to you by Strategic Partners and Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency that works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here's why SPM's really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, the editing, it's all done solely by their staff, crafted uniquely for their clients. And lastly, an Ole Miss grad, a Mississippian, and a really good friend of ours is a partner in the firm, so give them a call and see how great they are. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. And last but not least, we're brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford. I've been telling you about LB's for a while. It's home of the freshest cuts in Oxford. If you're living in Oxford, you owe it to yourself to make yourself a regular customer of LB's. And if you come into town frequently, you got a condo, your kid's got an apartment, give Greg Jones a call, 662-259-2999. Let Greg know what you want. He'll have it all packaged up for you. You'll be thrilled with the product. Everything that there is fantastic, whether it is the dry-aged ribeyes, the bone-in ribeyes, the fillets, the seasoned chicken, the pork, the pork sausage, the chicken sausage, the seafood fresh from the Gulf, everything there. The lamb sausage, fantastic. It's all there at LB's. You won't regret it. You'll be thrilled, in fact. So get in touch with Greg and let him know what you want. He'll have it hooked up for you. They've got a beer fridge up at the front. Grab a six-pack. Create a six-pack of your own. Tell Greg that you heard about LB's on the meat market, and that six-pack of craft beers, just $6 if you tell him that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden. So without further ado, let's switch over to Ryan Brown of WJOX. I think you'll enjoy a pretty fun, almost 50-minute interview with one of my good friends and one of your favorite podcast guests. Here's Ryan. Ryan, it has been a while. Good to talk to you. As we, as I always believe in total disclosure for the listener out there, as we record this, the opening day has begun here on this day. The Mets and your beloved Washington Nationals, their first game sans Bryce Harper. It's 1-0 Mets in the top of the second, and the Nationals already clearly struggling without Bryce Harper.
They'll never be the same. You know what's crazy? First of all, it has been too long, and I appreciate you having me back on. I always enjoy this. But what's crazy is I'm not a gambling man, but I love looking at the Las Vegas numbers because I just think you learn so much. I mean, they are as unbiased as it comes. They are trying to be as accurate with their score predictions as they could be. That's their job, you know, and to a certain extent. Now, there's times when Vegas – thinks they've got a good side and they don't mind moving the line to get more action on the side away from the side they think is the good side. That all that said, their games won predictions, they're over under on the win totals. Bryce Harper going to Philadelphia didn't really affect it all that much, you know. I mean, the Nationals are about where they were before Harper left, and the Phillies are about where they were before Harper got there. And I had a guy in Vegas tell me it would really only affect it about three games, and it's remarkable to think they pay him that kind of money, and Las Vegas views it as three games different in wins. That just doesn't seem like there's a return on investment on that, does it?
Yeah, no, and to your point, I mean, there's no question that Las Vegas' favorite team wears green. I mean, they wear green.
Yeah.
They wear green tops, green bottoms, green caps, green helmets, green shoes. They're green.
They look like Ben Franklin.
Yes, they do, and they all look like Franklin. Few of them look at Washington. You mix in an occasional Hamilton, but yeah, they're all those cats. And you know, I always enjoy Jason Stark's preseason. He does this big preseason poll of all the players and GMs and such, and it's anonymous. And I think it's fascinating. And this isn't Harper bashing, because I'll make no bones about it. I spent 2 years hoping the Cubs would sign him. In large part because I like the guy. I think he's kind of fun. So that's why I liked him. But I thought it was interesting that on most of the questions, the winner, you know, like which manager that you don't play for would you most like to play for? You know, the winner would get about 26%. You know, your favorite road trip in baseball. You know, the winning city had like 27% roughly. Most overrated player in baseball. It was Bryce Harper at 60-something percent.
That's amazing.
60-something percent.
Yeah, and you know, the debate was always Trout or Harper. Well, I think the open market told you, the free market told you which one baseball values more. You know, Harper had to fight and struggle to get 330 when he wanted 400. Trout had no problem. Anaheim stepped right up to the plate for Mike Trout. So I think the open market, and I've always been a Harper fan, and I still am. I'm not one of those that just because he's not on my team, I don't start hating him. I appreciate what he did for Washington. But I think the open market, the free market, told you who was more valued, and it was Mike Trout.
Yeah, what you found out is that had Mike Trout been on the open market,
he
may have gotten $500 million somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, no telling what he could have gotten. And it's funny to think that the Phillies were, you know, Harper and the Phillies were dropping heavy hints about leaving a spot open for him, and he never even made it to the market. Anaheim was smart enough to. Now, I'll say this: I don't like these long term deals. You know, I didn't like Washington offered Harper 10 years, $300 million, which I didn't like. I don't want to lock a guy up for 10 years, and I don't like these 12- and 13-year deals that these guys are getting. It's good in the short term, but boy, the back end of those contracts can really have you in a mess when their skills are declining and they need to be retiring, but they're still hanging on for the money.
You know, the Cubs, Carson went to school today in a Jason Hayward jersey. mostly because of the color of the jersey. The Cubs will wear gray on this Thursday in Texas because John Lester's pitching and it's on the road. So Carson's gray jersey is a Jason Hayward jersey, and it's funny because he got out and I saw read the Hayward on the back of my kid's jersey. I thought about what you just said. The Cubs kind of they gave Hayward that 8-year deal or whatever, and
yep.
And it you know it's never been what they thought it would be. He's been a very good defensive player, and he's been an average offensive player, and he apparently delivered one hell of a rain delay speech. But other than that, he's been basically a disappointment, and this was the first season that contract handcuffed the Cubs to a degree. It probably prevented them from – I don't know if they would have gotten involved with Harper or Machado or not, or Kimbrel or one of those guys, but it certainly tied their hands a little bit. The fascinating thing with baseball today that two things, well, actually three things. One, it's opening day, and it's nowhere close to the biggest news story.
No.
That's fascinating because when I was a kid, no, you're younger than me, but I dare say when you were a kid, it was a bigger story than it is today. Number two is just how much it does not resonate with kids at all, and just – kind of number three, that it's not a bigger story that guys like Craig Kimbrel and Dallas Keuchel and others are unemployed today.
They don't have a job. How insane is that? Now, some of that is on Kimbrel. Apparently, he wants a 5-year deal, 3-year guaranteed. And you know this, when closers start to go, they go quick.
Yeah.
There's no diminished skills for those guys, slowly diminished skills. They go from dominant closer to off the cliff. So you'd be an idiot to give a closer with as many miles as Kimbrel has on him that long of a deal. So some of that is on him. But, you know, Harper gets a lot of blame and Machado get a lot of blame that they strung it out so long that it caused a ripple effect to the down-the-line guys. And maybe there's some truth to that. I'd seen where some of the baseball guys said that's overblown, but it's weird that those guys are without a team right now. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's hard for me to believe that Dallas Keuchel can't make a major league rotation.
Yeah, or that, I would think so.
Or that Craig Kimbrel can't help a bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, I know the Braves fans around here wanted Kimbrel back, and you look at Keuchel, I mean, the Braves, I think, have got two rookies in their starting rotation to start the season. You tell me they couldn't use a Dallas Keuchel? I mean, it's insane to think those guys will start the year unemployed. That is remarkable.
And I'd be scared to add them in June when I don't know what kind of shape they're in, and are they ready to contribute, and is it going to take 6 weeks? And when they come up, are they going to try too hard? Are they going to get hurt? Are they not going to be sharp? I mean, if I'm Dallas Keuchel, I've fired my agent by now. I mean, I'm furious if I'm him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you.
And then just to touch on the kid thing, it was funny because you and I had a similar conversation before we got started. Carson, as he starts to get out of the car today, now he's pumped. He even though he doesn't really play baseball other than just kind of Oxford Park Commission, have some fun baseball, his travel baseball experience was a nightmare. But it has not impacted his love of the game. He can't wait for the Cubs to get going. He has all the spring training notifications has been on his phone. I mean, he'll come down and go, "Hey, Dad, Al Mora hit a home run." I'm like, "Yeah, it's March."
They don't count.
Yeah, it doesn't count. Anyway, he'll be like, "Yes." I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Cubs won 14-5. I'm like, "You know, it doesn't count, right? It didn't happen." Anyway, he got out as he's starting to get ready today. He says, "Not many kids at my school are into MLB, Dad." And I'm like, "What are they into?" And it's mostly NBA and some NFL and obviously a lot of Ole Miss stuff and that kind of thing, you know, kids in Oxford. But it's everything but Major League Baseball.
Yeah, it's crazy. I told you, I've got a 14-year-old, so she's an eighth grader. When I go to her middle school, I see kids wearing Steph Curry jerseys in Birmingham, Alabama. And, you know, you just think, I mean, the NBA, when I was a kid, it was Celtics, Lakers. I mean, that was the only NBA that mattered in the 80s, Celtics, Lakers. And, you know, by and large, the white dudes were Celtics fans and the black guys were Lakers fans.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way it broke. That's kind of the way it broke out. But you'll go to my daughter's school and you'll see a Steph Curry jersey. You'll see a James Harden jersey. And they're fans of the players. I don't think they get any sort of emotional connection to the Golden State Warriors or the Houston Rockets. I think they just love watching Curry play, and they love watching Harden play, and they're, you know, the jerseys are popular to have. I don't even know how many games they watch them play, but boy, I do not see any baseball jerseys. I don't.
No, I don't either. You'll see some NFL stuff. You'll see a lot of college stuff, but you see a ton of NBA stuff, and it's white. It's white kids, black kids.
It's everything. All the lines. Yeah,
they do a fabulous job of marketing their product. I've said that for a while.
Guy who likes the players are the stars.
I like the NBA. I watch it a lot, and they do a great job of marketing the players. It's something baseball could probably learn something from. All right. Speaking of basketball, the college variety, been a big week in your state. Auburn in the Sweet 16. Alabama fires Anthony Grant. We'll start with the firings because, dirty laundry always sells first. Were you surprised about Grant?
Johnson, Avery Johnson. And it's an understandable Freudian slip you had there. Not much changed.
I meant Avery Johnson. You're right. Not much changed.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It depended on who you listen to. There's a school of thought that Greg Byrne actually wanted Avery Johnson to coach one more year while he waited out the Sean Miller situation in Arizona to see how that shook out, because that's who he wanted to take over this program. The problem became that Avery Johnson was done with Alabama. I think once his son finished, I'm not certain his wife had any interest in staying in Tuscaloosa. I'm not saying that there was anything bad that happened in Tuscaloosa, but you got to remember they were big city people. I mean, they came from Dallas and they were part of the social scene in Dallas. They are involved in the horse business. So they go to Lexington and the parties in Louisville and the parties at Churchill Downs and things like that. And they just didn't have that in Tuscaloosa. Tuscaloosa is a smaller college town where you don't have that kind of life. So I think she liked that kind of life, and I think she probably was very interested in getting back to Tuscaloosa. Getting away from Tuscaloosa back to Dallas. And I don't think the college game was what Avery Johnson enjoyed. I don't think it was what he thought it was going to be. The recruiting, while he was okay at it, was something I don't think he particularly enjoyed. I don't think he liked the way you've got to coach college players versus the way you kind of manage pro players. And I think he was done. I think Avery Johnson wanted out. So I think that's what really precipitated this. Otherwise, I think he'd still be the coach for at least one more year. But I think Greg Byrne, his hand kind of got forced. And to a certain extent, I'm not surprised, because we've been hearing all along that once Avery Johnson was finished, this was probably going to be it for Avery Johnson. So that rumor had started circulating. So when the season ended the way it did, as poorly as it ended, I think this became almost the expected scenario for it to turn out this way.
You know, in Nashville at the SEC tournament, there was a lot of buzz about Avery Johnson and SMU. Was that just people trying to put two and two together, or was there something there?
Well, I think he really wanted that job. I think the unfortunate thing for him is the job never came open. I don't know, that he's got the cachet that SMU would make a change for him. But that rumor had gotten out there. The first rumor, Neil, was when the GM job came open in New Orleans, that maybe rather than be a coach, he would go the route of the general manager. And obviously there was no interest in New Orleans part in that, but that had become, as a matter of fact, there was speculation and rumor that he actually interviewed with New Orleans over the All-Star break. I think if I've got the timeline right, I think Alabama was at Texas A&M and there was speculation that maybe he swung back by New Orleans on the way home over the All-Star break. So I don't know how much truth there is to that, but I do think he wanted back either in Dallas or in the NBA, one of those two, in a bigger market situation than Tuscaloosa. I just don't think they were ever comfortable going from a big city like Dallas to a small place like Tuscaloosa, and going from the big NBA to the smaller college game in their eyes.
It's a totally different game. I tell people this all the time who don't watch NBA, and I get it. Look, NBA is not for everybody in the same way that NASCAR is not for everybody. I don't. When people say, man, I hate the NBA, it doesn't really bother me. I get it. I mean, I watch more of it than I probably would like to, or probably should. I watch a lot of it. I like it, but it's a complete. Yeah. It's a completely different product. It's the game is played differently. The game is officiated differently. The NBA season is a long one. A loss is often no big deal. A loss is often expected. You know, the second night of a back to back, you're on the road. You you played in Portland, and then you play in Sacramento, and you know you took the Blazers to overtime, and then you go to play Sacramento the next night, and you kind of get run out of the building a little bit. And if you're in the NBA, you know, well, it was kind of predicted. That was a schedule loss, and every team kind of goes into every season with, you know, 8 to 10 schedule wins and 8 to 10 schedule losses, and those usually sort of hold up. It's not like that in the college game. You lose a game, and you don't play again for 4 or 5 days, and you have a lot of time to dwell on it, and the kids are harder to manage because they're younger and they're not professionals, and you can't hold them accountable in some of the same ways that you can in the NBA. And I would think going from coaching an NBA team and working, covering the NBA and working for a Popovich kind of a deal to running a program like Alabama, where, you know, I mean, let's face it, Nick Saban's the bell cow there. That football's the bell cow. You're never going to be priority one in any way, nor should you be, really, but I would think that adjustment would be more difficult than maybe some of us think it would be.
Well, and two things there. Number one, so it makes sense when you put it that way. You're right, and it makes sense why he's successful with a player like Colin Sexton, because it's a very much NBA style of game. Come down, clear out, let Colin Sexton isolate and go one-on-one on a guy, and he's good enough to beat most people to the basket, right? Or
yeah.
Create his own shot.
For sure.
And that's what you get in the NBA. You know, very, very James Harden, to, you know, go back to something we talked about earlier, very James Harden-like. So that's why he's successful with a Colin Sexton. Well, he doesn't have that player this year. I mean, Kyra Lewis is a nice point guard. He's a young kid. He's not Colin Sexton by any stretch. And John Petty, Dazon Ingram, guys like that don't do that. And that shows you, I think, why he maybe had success with Colin Sexton and couldn't find it elsewhere. But another challenge, and this will be a challenge for the new coach, Nate Oates. You know, and this is understandable. Alabama's a football school, and the majority of the fans that follow Alabama basketball, you've got some hardcore Alabama basketball fans that, you know, are Alabama basketball fans first, but the mass of your fan base are football fans that will pay attention in November, December, but they really lock in after football, right when you start the conference season. And because of the success historically of Alabama football, where one loss is earth-shattering in this state, one football loss is the end of the world a lot of times, they bring that mindset to basketball, Neil, where one loss is a big deal. And, I mean, it really, you can see it on our show. It takes one conference loss, and, boy, fans get upset about it. Whereas one conference loss isn't that big a deal. I mean, you finish an 18-game schedule, 12-6. You've done pretty well. My gosh, you finished 14-4. You're in the running for the one seed in the conference tournament. That's four losses. One loss is a big deal to Alabama fans.
Yeah, I just covered a 10-8 team. I just covered a 10-8 team that went to the NCAA tournament. Yeah, sure.
And had the coach of the year, conference coach of the year.
Yeah, for sure. So Nate Oates gets that job. I know you. I'm guessing he was not on, because I saw some of you guys joking about the Thad Matta era in Tuscaloosa, which lasted about as long as the Thad Matta era in Oxford, ironically.
Actually, I get the feeling Thad Matta doesn't want to coach anymore. I don't know where I'm getting this.
You know, it's almost like, and I'm just speculating, and there's no way this is accurate. It's almost like there's a clause in his deal with Ohio State that he has to look like he's trying for a job.
Yeah, I would imagine that's probably what is at play here, because he flirted with Georgia last year and decided he didn't want to do it. Flirted with Ole Miss, decided he wanted to do it, and flirted with Alabama. So he's working his way through the SEC. Maybe a job will come open he finally wants in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, he made the trip to Oxford. I mean, the Thad Matta era in Oxford lasted a good day. I mean, it was a day.
We got about 30 minutes out of it here. So
Nate Oates gets it. It was a name probably somewhat out of the blue for you guys. Why Oates?
It's a good question. You know, Jeff Goodman actually had Nate Oates as one of the old down the list guys, so he at least got mentioned in relation to this job. It would be the normal fallback. Okay, I went for plan A, struck out. Plan B, struck out. Plan C, struck out. All right, let's go mid-major. Who we got down in the mid-major? So this Nate Oates guy, he's pretty good at Buffalo. But it's kind of hard to believe that's the way it went, because Avery Johnson has only been officially out of a job 5 or 6 days, and realistically out of a job a week or so. So you you got to that name pretty quick. So what that tells me, this name is pretty high on Greg Burns' list. Whether he's right or wrong, I don't know. We'll see, because these mid-major guys are a total crapshoot. But I think Greg Byrne had this. This is one of his top two or three names. So he got to Greg. Nate Oates pretty fast. I don't think he was fighting anybody for Nate Oates. I don't know who else was going to hire him. I mean, he had just done a contract extension at Buffalo 13 days ago. So I think that tells you he probably thought there was a decent shot. He was sticking around at Buffalo for another year. I don't think any of these other SEC jobs, I mean, A&M's been open a while. If they wanted to hire Nate Oates, they could have by now. Vanderbilt was open pretty quickly after Alabama. They could have hired him. Arkansas was later than Alabama, but they could have hired him. So, UCLA's been open half a season. They could have hired him if they wanted him. So I don't know who Alabama was fighting to get to Nate Oates. So it tells me that that was a guy that must have been pretty high on Greg Burns' radar screen right away.
Kyra Lewis is leaving. Several – Dazon Ingram's leaving, or at least entertaining the idea of leaving. Is it a rebuild?
John Petty?
Yeah, Petty's good too. Is it a rebuild now?
Well, it is if those guys leave. So I think some of those guys are going to reconsider. I think Nate Oates, you know, now has a recruiting, you know, he's got to recruit his team first. And a lot of new coaches have to do that. But this whole transfer portal has made it more known that guys are looking to leave. I don't think all those guys will end up leaving. It wouldn't shock me if Ingram does. He would be, in his final year. But Petty and Kyra Lewis still have some time left. So it wouldn't shock me if they stick around. Worst case scenario, if all those guys leave, if Daniel Giddens stays in the transfer portal, you've lost Riley Norris and Dante Hall to graduation. Neil, that would be more than 50 points per game that you would have to find a replacement for. Alabama would have four scholarship players. So he would have an absolute mess on his hands day one if he can't convince some of those guys to come back.
Okay, so not that long ago, again, you know, talk about spans of time, months ago, it was widely considered that Bruce Pearl was potentially in trouble with this FBI thing, could still be in trouble with this FBI thing. There were people who thought Auburn wanted Bruce Pearl to get out of there. The season wasn't just the wild, overwhelming success in the regular season that some people expected. And he kind of went into the postseason. I mean, he was fine, but I don't think anybody was just in love with the job that Bruce Pearl had done. They beat Tennessee in the regular season finale. They kind of rolled through the SEC tournament. They escape round one of the NCAA, and they're playing in the NCAA tournament in the Sweet 16 this weekend. Not really about how far Auburn can go, because we'll see. I mean, they've got to play probably North Carolina and then probably Kentucky to get to or Houston to get to the Final Four. But has Pearl completely escaped danger here? And is he even to the point where he could pick up and go elsewhere?
It's a great question. You know, I think we are just now getting around to the NCAA arm of this. You know, it's been the FBI arm all along. And here's what's interesting. Will Wade played the exact same strategy that Bruce Pearl played. Now, here's the big difference. Obviously, there were transcripts that were leaked with Will Wade's, you know, or not with his voice on it, but a transcript of what he said. You never had that with Bruce Pearl. In fact, it was an assistant with Bruce Pearl that was caught up in all of this, and Chuck Person. But Bruce Pearl, basically, his attorneys told him, do not go talk to the school, don't talk to the NCAA, just keep your mouth shut. He did. Auburn let him coach, but the school president was very vocal, saying, it is my expectation that at some point Coach Pearl's going to have to come in and talk to me. And it started to look like you were headed for a standoff there, but it just never really materialized. To the point that, yeah, I'm willing to say Bruce Pearl's past this. I think he's about to get a hefty contract extension and a raise. And until the NCAA shows up and says, you know, what Chuck Person did, we're going to look into, and Bruce Pearl, you're on our radar screen too, I think he's fine. And could he cash in on this to go elsewhere? Sure. I don't know, you know, maybe UCLA, but I don't think there's a job right now that Bruce Pearl would leave Auburn for, assuming, and I'm assuming none of these conference schools would come after him. You could obviously say that Texas A&M could be an upgrade because of their facilities and the money and all that. Certainly Arkansas's history would tell you that's an upgrade, but I think he's probably still at Auburn, and I think he gets a contract extension, and I do think he has survived the worst part of this right now, unless an NCAA shoe drops.
You are I'm going to get to something else there. You just spurred a question. Are you of the opinion that this, like the Avenatti thing and all that stuff, I mean, I know he's a scumbag and all of those things. I get it. But he's got evidence. Are you of the opinion that the NCAA is just going to disregard the evidence and say, we're just not going there, we're not going to hit Arizona, we're not going to hit Duke, we're not going to hit, I don't care what you've got, we're going to ignore it, it's too much money? Or do you think this results in what some of the coaches out there think, and that is that this is going to be a bomb dropping?
I've always thought, and it's rare that you get a presidential candidate involved in something like this. So, I mean, maybe Avenatti's got something. But is he still running for president, or is he giving up on that? Do you know?
I don't like his chances right now. I'll put it that way.
They're not good.
It doesn't feel like he has momentum in Iowa.
It doesn't. But, hey, the election is still a long time away.
Well, that is true.
I have always thought that the easiest out for the NCAA is to say, hey, look, we understand there was wrongdoing going on, but this whole situation has brought to light an inequality we have with the student athlete, and we're going to concentrate on fixing that. We're going to fix that. We're not going to drop punishment. We're going to fix what's going on with the student athlete here. I've always thought that was the easiest way out for them, so you don't have to punish the teams that keep your doors open, because the NCAA tournament, the men's basketball tournament, is what keeps the NCAA doors open. And you start punishing Duke and Kansas and Arizona, you're punishing teams that have carried you for years. And I've just always thought that was the easiest way out for them, is to say, rather than punish, we're going to address the problems that led to this. And I think that works for the NCAA. And I still think that's what they'll do, even though they've come down heavy-handed on some of these players on ineligibility and suspension. I still don't think they're going to hammer the teams to pay their bills.
I think I agree with you. And, man, if I get why. Like, I mean, obviously, there's Ole Miss fans listening to this who say that's bullshit. And I get it. I get why they're that upset. I mean, I do.
Oh, sure.
I totally understand their frustration with it. So what happens with Will Wade, in your opinion?
I can't see a way he ever coaches for LSU again. I mean, they have kneecapped him at every public opportunity. Anytime they have been asked about it, they haven't given a swift no comment. In fact, the attorney for the school the other day said, our expectation is that he comes in and finally tells us the truth. I don't see how he coaches for them again. I mean, they've basically suspended him in the most important time of the year with a team that, I mean, that team could have made the Final Four. I mean, they're still alive. Heck, they may under Tony Benford. I don't know. But that team's talented enough, Neil. They could have made the Final Four. There's nothing that says they can't upset a one seed.
They were the best team I saw in person all year.
Yeah, they're terrific. They're an uber-talented team. But, I mean, to suspend him in the most important time of the year, to basically say, hey, we got a Final Four talent team, but we're going to sacrifice that because our coach, and then to every time you've had a chance to publicly distance yourself from it or give a good swift no comment, you've chosen to actually kneecap your coach. I don't see how he ever coaches there again. It would be shocking to me if Will Wade's ever back on that sideline.
You do daily radio in what is probably not even arguably the college football capital of the world. Birmingham gets the top ratings for every game, any game, no matter really who plays in a college football game. I'm curious, the SEC's been really good in basketball the last 2 years. Now, I know Alabama hasn't been great. They were good a year ago, and Auburn's very good this year. But how much does basketball, now that the league is obviously taking it seriously, the league is committing resources to it, is involved in recruiting better players, upped its game, in other words. How much more traction does basketball get on your show now as opposed to, a couple, 3 years ago?
Yeah, you get a little bit, but it's still dependent on one of the two teams making a run. Last year you had Alabama and Auburn both advancing around, and, Alabama caught Villanova in the second round, and I don't think even the most ardent Alabama fan thought they were going to beat Villanova. But, Auburn looked like as a four seed last year, looked like a team that could make a decent deep run, and then Clemson just kind of hammered them in the second round. But there was some excitement about that. It's more dependent on the local teams doing well. I mean, if Alabama and Auburn both miss this year's tournament, there would be some talk. I mean, people are looking to be entertained. People are looking to gamble on games. So you've got that level of interest. The fact that it's on TV, I want to watch something that's sports and this is exciting, or I got the office pool with my bracket, or I got – but beyond that, I don't think there's any – look, man, when – I'm trying to think of a good example on this. When Boise State and Florida State play on a Thursday night, a random Thursday night game, or even Florida State and Miami or something, people care about that game here. And whether they got money on it or not, it's a college football game. And they'll call in the next day and talk about it. It's just – it's different. I mean, the college football certainly drives this town, and college basketball is nowhere close to that. You got a passing interest in it, but college football, people are invested in it, man. And it's not just Alabama and Auburn. Like I said, it's any game that's on TV. Monday after an Alabama and Auburn weekend, we're taking calls on the Ohio State-Maryland game that almost was an upset last year. It's people just love football, period.
Your listeners will love it that I'll phrase this question this way, because I once wrote a column that sort of talked using this word, and it gained some traction, which is what columns are supposed to do. Columns are supposed to gain traction. Yeah, and it did. Has Clemson passed Alabama as the preeminent college football program in the country? And I mean that with no disrespect to Alabama. It's obviously had and is in the midst of an incredible historic run. But as of this day today, Clemson just popped Alabama in a championship game. Clemson is recruiting at the same level that Alabama is recruiting, maybe even a notch higher, maybe even a notch more efficiently. Dabo is younger than Nick Saban. Right now, today, at this moment, if you were to do power rankings of programs, not teams, would Clemson be number one?
That's a great question. I think the snapshot would tell you yes, but and here's the thing, they've met four times now, three times in national championship games where Clemson does have the edge 2-1 in those games. But the fourth meeting was in the playoffs where Alabama smacked Clemson in the mouth.
Yeah.
So they're two and two over their last four. So it's hard to make a case if you look at the big picture and say, oh, they are clearly superior when it's 2-2 in the last four. And all those games have immense meaning. I mean, there was no just random regular season game. These are college playoff or college national championship games. So I would tend to say that's reflected that they're more even right now than Clemson is obviously ahead. Now let them meet this year and Clemson win again, and then you can definitely make that argument if that happens. Or if they meet this year and Alabama wins again, you say, okay, well, maybe Alabama's a tick ahead. But I don't think it's a slam dunk that Clemson is the better program right now. If anything, I think that those results will tell you they're tied.
Who's number three?
Oklahoma is in the playoffs every year, and it really, Lincoln Riley's got it kicking there. Georgia is right on the cusp, but, I haven't won a national championship, neither has Oklahoma. Ohio State, losing Urban Meyer, I don't know. That is an awesome question.
Isn't that crazy? Used to be an easy answer. Used to be a super easy answer. But now, you can argue who's number one, and you can make an argument for Alabama, obviously, and you can make an argument for Clemson, although I agree with what you just said. But you could make the argument for Clemson, and no one could say, oh, you're an idiot. You're biased. No, you can make an argument for Clemson. You absolutely can. When you talk about who's after those two programs, it's the silence that you gave me for a minute. You have to think. I don't know that there's an easy answer. I was asked that question the other day, and I paused like you did, and it's funny. I ended up saying Georgia, but then immediately started questioning myself because Georgia can't get over the hump.
Well, they can. In Oklahoma, Georgia's been to the one playoff, and Oklahoma's been to the last two under Lincoln Riley. Now, they can't advance out of the semifinals. They played Georgia in a classic game, and came back and made the Alabama game closer than it probably really was. So I think I would probably go Oklahoma, even though Georgia beat them in that head-to-head. I think I might go Oklahoma in front of Georgia. They've done it more consistently. Georgia is in a more difficult spot to do it. There's no doubt about that. And they have at least been to a national championship. I don't know. I can make an argument for Ohio State, Georgia, Oklahoma, but I don't know if I could convince myself about any of the three.
A lot of people there cheering for Oklahoma this season?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird dynamic. You know, it's funny to bring that up because Jalen Hurts met the media today or yesterday, and on today's show we played some of the audio, and we got some tweets of people saying, I'm tired of Jalen, he's not in Alabama, move on. We got some Auburn fans, you know, you're only playing it because he played at Alabama. It's not true. I mean, we talk about all college football, and he's a fringe Heisman candidate, so he's obviously worthy of talking about. But I think the initial reaction was, I wish him well, good luck at Oklahoma. But now the time has gone down the road a little bit, especially if he continues to be successful and it looks like he might meet him in the playoffs. I think Alabama fans will tire of that story just a little bit.
Let me get your thoughts before we start to close. Let me get your thoughts on the rest of the SEC West. I know that Alabama is going to be the favorite. LSU's recruiting like gangbusters, but I don't know. Their program's kind of – it feels to me like it's sort of in neutral, not necessarily going anywhere. Jimbo feels like he has momentum at Texas A&M. Ole Miss is finally out of the NCAA cloud, but the rebuilding kind of begins now. Mississippi State feels like it's lost momentum, to me at least.
I agree.
And then, you know, I don't know what I think about Auburn, frankly. I don't. You'll be able to fill me in. And then Arkansas's – I mean, we talked to Tom Murphy the other day on our podcast, and, you know, he said if you're doing over-under, five sort of the number, and, you know, six wins would be an accomplishment for Chad Morris, and yet Tom did not sound super confident that the Hogs could get there. What are your sort of thoughts in the West?
Well, I'll start with Auburn. You know, look, they've got the best quarterback battle probably in the SEC. In theory, it's four guys. Cord Sandberg, who's kind of the older guy. He played, you know, he hasn't played for a while, came back last year. Joey Gatewood, who was on the roster and was one of those hot prospects when he came in, hasn't necessarily panned out to the level you thought he would yet. Malik Willis, who was the backup last year, that when he came in was not allowed to basically run the offense because Melzon didn't trust him to throw the ball. And then the hot recruit is Bo Nix. It's the son of Patrick Nix that was the former Auburn quarterback himself. He's now a high school coach in the Birmingham area at Pinson High School, and his son rewrote the record book. And he was a terrific high school quarterback, and I think everybody assumes he's going to win the job. But he's going to be a true freshman. And Auburn opens against Oregon and does not play an easy schedule by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, it's a difficult slate for a true freshman to maneuver. So I think that's interesting. And beyond that, Auburn hasn't recruited all that well of late at offensive line. So there's some questions at offensive line. They weren't terrific at running back last year. So you got some questions at running back. So there are a lot of questions on that Auburn offense. And I think they're going to have to rest heavy on their defense last year, this year that wasn't quite up last year to where it had been the year before. You know, you look at LSU, I saw that Ed Orgeron, see if you've heard this before, I finally got the offense I want at LSU. It seems like you hear that all the time, and they're never any good on offense consistently. And I just don't trust Joe Burrow. And they say he's going to run more, which is going to help him. I'll believe it when I see it, man. I'll believe it when I see it. I agree with what you said about Mississippi State. It feels like they lost a little momentum last year. Ole Miss, you know, I think everybody looks at replacing Tamu because he led the conference in passing. You know, are you going to be able to replace him to the level? And then you got to, obviously, they got to get better on defense. They weren't anywhere close to a conference caliber defense last year. And then then you get A&M, which is going to be everybody's sexy pick. Here's the fascinating thing, not that it matters what the media think, but I would be interested if A&M finishes second in the Western voting this year. I think they probably will. I think they're going to be the sexy pick, even though they play a brutally difficult conference or brutally difficult schedule. I think they'll probably be the popular pick to be number two in the West.
Which is the kiss of death, frankly.
No doubt. No doubt about it.
Yeah. I mean, their schedule's brutal, and they were good last year. They weren't great. I think the West has been – I think Saban has absolutely crushed the West. I mean, he's got all these programs just questioning themselves, and you know, nobody gives their program any sort of time to sort of develop an identity, and everyone tries different things, and everything's based on well, here's how you know, this is, you got to be able to do this to beat Alabama. And he's in everyone's heads, with in my opinion, with absolutely no question.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you completely. And even to the point, look, the whole conference, you see a lot of guys trying to catch lightning in a bottle by getting the old Saban guy. And that's what Texas A&M did, a guy that had connections to Saban. Even though Jimbo Fisher's his own man, he's got connections. And I think A&M, I think that had to affect their hiring of Jimbo Fisher a little bit, is you're hoping that you've got another Nick Saban. You've already got a guy that won a national championship. And look, they're not paying him that kind of money to finish second in the West. They expect him to get them to Atlanta. And I don't think he's there yet. I think he can build that there. But I think people think it's going to be that magical second year. You look at that schedule, and it's not just the fact that it includes Clemson and Alabama. It's a brutally difficult schedule for them.
Yeah, the road trips are tough.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah, that thing could go south. But you're right. Hey, man, when you pay somebody the kind of money they're paying him, and you get the North Korean army to their band to meet you at the at the airport.
And, yes.
And you break out your prettiest cheerleaders. You're letting it be known to the guy. Hey, the check's not for free, pal. He's a really good coach. He's a really good coach. Jimbo's really good. But I don't know. It's when the expectation is catch and beat Alabama. That is hard.
That's tough right now. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, it's not great. Not the greatest podcast in the world. Pat Forty has a story out with the development on this Will Wade, Javonte Smart story that identifies the middleman that's referenced in the strong ass offer. It's Shannon Foreman, who's a fixture in Baton Rouge basketball circles and someone who's very tight with Javonte Smart. If I'm LSU, I guess I'm just going for it now. Whatever you get, this is going to get stripped from you.
Yeah, you may as well just bring Will Wade back and let him coach the rest of the tournament, right?
Yeah, just let him roll. It's not pretty. It's funny because I was in Nashville. We're going to close in a second. I was in Nashville, and I had so many different people that I know in coaching, different programs and stuff, say, man, April's going to be wild. Bombs are going to drop. And they all say that, and you know this, coaches gossip more than media, more than high school girls. Coaches gossip, just gossip and gossip and gossip, but they're all literally convinced that it's going to be bad. That a lot of heads are going to roll. That people are going to have to retire. That guys are going to go to the NBA who were previously not going to go to the NBA. They're convinced that a lot of things are going to happen.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong in what I said earlier, but boy, if there's a reckoning in college basketball, that is the filthiest sport out there. If they're going to have a true reckoning in college basketball, it is. There's going to be blood in the streets, man. That thing's going to get nasty.
Yeah, because none of these guys are going to go down. They're not going to wear the crown and just take it themselves. You think
Will Wade's going to lose that job and not say, buddy, if I'm going down, let me tell you who else is going down.
Oh, he's going to sing. He's going to sing. And I'll tell you, here's the wild card in it. Some of these basketball coaches will say, so you think this is bad? Let me tell you how football works here.
I know. That's the last thing you want.
Yeah.
That is the last thing you want.
Speaking of basketball in the tournament, we'll close here. You lost another bracket challenge. I followed your adventures. And for those who don't know this, I don't think Ryan Brown likes cold weather at all. I think he would prefer it to live in the balmiest climate possible. You went to the Nebraska South Dakota border for a couple of days.
Yep.
Tell me about it.
That is true. Okay, so we do a segment on our show called Trash on the Table. It's 10 minutes of just crazy off the wall stories that make you laugh and nothing to do with sports. And one day, so we do a bracket challenge every year where the listeners, we throw four options out. Listeners get to pick the punishment for whoever finishes last in the bracket. And they've become more and more extreme. And one day we threw a story out on Trash on the Table about Manawai, Nebraska, which is the smallest town in the world, and it's population one. It's this old elderly lady. She's in her 80s, and she's lived there her whole life, and she's the only resident anymore. And she's got a little tavern there, and people from other towns come in the afternoon and have some beers, and she serves food, and it's a farming community, you know, cattle farmers, and it's up on the Nebraska-South Dakota border. And we did a story on that, and somebody said, oh, that'd be a good bracket challenge. And, of course, our listeners did not forget that. And so it ended up the bracket punishment was 48 hours in Monowat, Nebraska. So, of course, I lost, as I always do. So I flew into Omaha, rented a car, and drove 3.5 hours into the middle of nowhere. And it's like nothing I've ever done because, look, I'm a Southern boy. I'm born and bred in Alabama. I've traveled, but I've lived my whole life here. And, you know, when you drive in Alabama, you got elevation changes and trees and houses. You drive out there, it's a long, flat, straight road. There are no trees. You pass one house every 5 minutes. And I looked down one time, and I was doing like 98 miles an hour just because there's no point of reference. I'm just driving to an empty horizon. And I was like, I mean, it's just wild, man. It's another world. And you're in the middle of nowhere, and they're the nicest people. But it's freezing cold. There's snow everywhere. I put my car in a ditch.
That was the most amazing story, is you put your car in a ditch, and you're like basically in – you just gotten to Monowai.
Just gotten to town, yeah.
You put your car in a ditch, and you don't know how to get the hell out of there, and then you run into like the most amazing person. It's incredible.
It's amazing. So I knew I was getting close to the town, and I was going to stop and do a selfie in front of the sign just as a proof of life, like, hey, I'm in Monowai, right?
Yeah, I paid up. So
before I realize it, the sign's on top of me, and I blow past it, and then I blow through the town before I could even slow down. I mean, that's how quick, but it was bang, bang. So I come out the other side of the little town, and I realize, well, obviously there's this road sign on the other side, so I'll just wheel around, and I'll get my photo there. So I'm just going to pull off on the shoulder of the road, and I pull off and stop, and I'm getting out making the photo, and I hear a crunching sound. I turn around, and my car, without me in it, is starting to slide down the embankment because the road, the shoulder of the road is nothing but ice. It looked like grass, but it was ice.
Yeah.
So I jump in and manage to get in and drive and gun it, and that causes me to fishtail, and I just go down in the ditch. So I try for like 20 minutes to get it out, and I'm getting out of the car, getting ready to walk down to the tavern to ask for help because I just passed and I saw that there were cars there. And a former Army Ranger pulls up, who was a retired colonel, was a professor, taught classes at West Point, and he writes novels about war now, or history books about war, and he's from that area. So when he has to do his long-form writing, he comes home to the farm because, as he told me, there are zero distractions on that farm. There is nothing going on. So he can get his writing done. And he was headed back to Sioux City to fly home and could not have been a nicer guy. Went and got a tow chain and towed me out of the ditch. So it took an Army Ranger to get me out of the ditch, but I got out.
That's simply an amazing story. It really is.
That is crazy. The stupid stuff we do. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
Do you know what this year's punishment is? Have you seen what this year's is?
It's something about multiple states, right?
Yeah, so it's the 10-state challenge. So the loser has to take – you can't count Alabama. Alabama does not count. The loser has to take a selfie in front of a 10-state line signs in 48 hours. You got 48 hours to do it. And you have to submit your travel plan to the two winners, and they get to add on five challenges in five states. So in other words – you know, if Maryland's one of your states, you got to do something in Maryland. You got to do something in North Carolina on top of make the photo, and you got 48 hours to accomplish it. So I'll probably lose again. Yeah, you'll be talking to me about that.
History says you lose. Have you started working on your travel plan?
There are two good options. You got to do it on the Eastern Seaboard. You can't do it out west. States are too far apart. Your two best options are, one, fly to Providence and drive back to Birmingham. That gets you 10 states if you take the right route. Or you can fly to Maine, drive to Philadelphia, and fly home from there and knock out 10 states up in the New England area. So it just depends on if you want two flights or you want a flight and a drive. It depends on which one of those two you choose. That's basically the best two ways of doing it, looking at the entire map of the United States.
But they could really mess you up with the challenges, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, we've got a gentleman's agreement that we're not going to kill one another. It's not good for the show if one of us dies. So, yeah, they could definitely mess me up. There's no doubt about it.
That's fantastic. We did that and Parham lost, but he still hasn't paid up. So we gotta figure it out. Well, hey man, as always, it's great catching up with you. I enjoy it. You're fantastic at this, and everybody always loves hearing from you. So love to do it again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it again soon. And it's always fun talking to you, man.
All right, talk to you soon, Ryan. Thanks.
Yep.
Again, our thanks to Ryan Brown for his time today on the Beer Garden. We'll come back next week with another Beer Garden. It'll be Final Four time. We'll preview the Final Four. We'll look ahead. The Major League Baseball season has begun, but it'll still be in the very early phases. We'll talk some Major League Baseball as well. And the NBA playoffs will be right around the corner. We'll take a look at some of the playoff races. Can anyone beat the Golden State Warriors? Who wins the East? A lot of fun things to look at in the NBA. So we'll talk about those topics sometime next week on the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal. Until then, have a great weekend. Take care.